Hey everybody, welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. Postmasters, the hangover is gone. It is over, and we are back into the PGA Tour season. A fun week last week, one you had to tune into for one young man making his pro debut. But before we get to all that, just a reminder, if you want to get in touch with us, hit us up on Twitter at the Clubhouse Pod. You can hit me up at Shane Bacon. Use the hashtag ClubhouseSB if you have any questions, mailbag questions, things you want answered, and anything lengthier. Shoot us over a note at theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com. As I mentioned, we are past the Masters. We're past the Jordan Spieth situation, the Danny Willett win, and we're back into the PGA Tour season, although a lot of guys aren't, because it's apparently spring break season for the golf world. Yes, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Justin Thomas, and Smiley Kaufman, two of those names were in the final group at Augusta on Sunday, are vacationing together. They're hanging out, they're Snapchatting, they're enjoying it. They're taking their time away from the game, which is obviously fairly necessary and cool. And it brings me to a point I've been making, and I talked to Brad Faxon, our guest, who will be on here just a bit, about this, you know, just in the difference of maybe the Tiger era on the PGA Tour and this era now, where it seems like all these young guys who grew up together, playing together, enjoy each other's company, they do stuff outside of golf. I mean, these guys are always hanging out, eating dinner. And it almost feels a little European Tory. I mean, it really does. You used to get this group that always said, I don't really like the PGA Tour's feel. It's everybody has their camps and their teams and their nutritionists and fitness and everything. Now you're getting groups of guys that really do enjoy hanging out with each other afterwards. And that has to be good for one thing and one thing only. Davis Love III, are you listening to me right now? The Ryder Cup. I mean, we've talked about new blood at the Ryder Cup over and over again. We've talked about a lot of young guys that we'd love to see make the team this year. Those names I mentioned, you know, Finau, DeChambeau, all these guys that have a ton of talent that are young American players. And I just think that if these guys enjoy themselves this much, isn't that creating what the European tours have had over us over the years? I mean, they have a camaraderie that we don't have, that we haven't had with these teams. And I just look at these types of moments. Sure, it's a goofy trip to an island to play golf and hang out on the beach and get on a boat. But it's still building relationships that are real. They're not fake and fudged and not true, you know, partnerships. You're throwing random guys together and hoping it works. To me, these are guys that have played on Walker Cups together, that play matches together, that know each other's games, that know when the guy gets down, leave him alone, or go talk to him, bring up something else. You know, talk about life, his parents, his brother, you know, his girlfriend, whatever you got to bring up. I just feel like this is another example of how a Ryder Cup process needs to change. I want to see a whole bunch of rookies on this team. If we lose, we lose. We do it anyway with veterans. And I just hope that this is another one of those moments that Davis Love and everybody around the American Ryder Cup situation looks at and says, we've got a great opportunity here. Let's take advantage of it. But, of course, before we get to all that, a fun, relaxing week last week at Harbortown. I am a little upset at Brandon Grace. I had him all lined up to be my sleeper at the U.S. Open at Oakmont. Actually, Brad Faxon mentions him as well when I asked him some of his favorites later in the podcast. But I was fired up. I was like, this guy is great. He played well at Chambers Bay. He's kind of got that grinded-out type of golf game. And what does he do? Grinds it out at a tough week there at Harbortown and wins with that Sunday 66. So a great win for him. First one on the PGA Tour, of course. Great, great European Tour player and has a lot of talent. So now he's maybe not as much of a sleeper. But to me, a sleeper is anybody outside of about the top six, because that's who all the experts pick anyway. It's just find somebody that's about ranked 15th or 20th in the world. And if you say their name and you're right, you look like a genius, a lot like Danny Willett. So that was a fun week. I do think Harbortown is one of those golf tournaments that doesn't give enough credit. Everybody seems to enjoy it. Everybody loves the relaxing feel of it. You kind of get away from all the craziness that is Augusta National and the Masters and the Major and all the media, and you get to actually just go play some golf. So a good week there, and I think it was great to see what happened with Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, making a pro debut, new clubs, new sponsor, all the attention in the world, and he plays incredible golf for 4 days. And really, the kid continues to live up to expectations, and I'm not sure we've seen an amateur do that since Tiger Woods. No offense to Ryan Moore. So it's fun, and I understand that he's polarizing. I've met the kid. I love him. I'm hoping to get him on the podcast soon. He seems exactly like the type of guy I'd like to talk, not just golf, with life with. But if anything else, and I mentioned this on Twitter, this guy moves the needle, and he gets people interested, and he gets people to react, and he gets people to say, that's never going to work, or I'm sick of all the gushing by the media, which I understand. It does get annoying when everybody in the world's saying, this guy's the next big thing. But frankly, at this point, it sure looks like he is. So I just thought it was a great debut from him, and I'm excited to see what comes forward. I'm excited to see when his first win is, and I'm really excited to see him at the next few majors because he does seem to play better when the conditions are tough. We saw it at the U.S. Amateur last year, and obviously we saw it this past week at Harbortown. So a fun week on tour, again, a relaxing post-Masters week, and I do believe this is going to be the time where you're going to see a lot of guys take time off because we've mentioned it a few times on the podcast. You're getting that 45-day run of three major championships being played, plus the Olympics, plus the Ryder Cup. So the latter part of this season is going to be nuts for these guys, especially the guys that are going to make those teams, you know, the Jordan Spieths and the Rickies that are Americans that are making Olympics and making those teams, Dustin Johnson, Bubba, to name a few more. So, you know, those guys are really going to have to find some time, even though Bubba is in China this week, which brings us to our tweet of the week. And let me just say this. People give Bubba a lot of flack a lot of the time. They're on Bubba a lot for all his antics and everything. And I will say this about Bubba. When he's off the golf course, when he's away from the way he plays, he does have the ability to poke fun at himself. And I appreciate that because I think so many times we harbor on all the negatives that is Bubba Watson. And I loved his little video he posted, and we'll retweet it on the Clubhouse Pod, so make sure you go over there and follow us there. Chipping at night in China this week, playing the pro golf tournament there, just kind of goofing around like he always does in the videos, hits kind of a little shanky chip that doesn't even get on the green, and three international players walk by and give the word mud ball in their respective languages. And I just, again, I think it's something funny Bubba can do. It's something relatable and fun and kind of goofy. And I like that the other players were involved as well. And if nothing else, you can watch something that Bubba does and goes, okay, that works for me. I'm in on that. So I enjoyed that from Bubba and thought it was a funny tweet. So that's our tweet of the week. Bubba, I'm not sure you're going to win that again for a while, so congrats. And we move on from the tweet of the week to did you see that? And to one of my favorite Twitter follows out there. And just one of the best follows in sports. Tiffany Joe, she chipped in last week during the LPGA event. And let me just say, she didn't exactly know what to do after. She was obviously on Golf Channel. Paige McKenzie, also on Golf Channel, former LPGA Tour player, kind of retweeted the video, giving her some hell about it. And Tiffany's, I don't know what to do with my hand. She went with the sunglasses off the hat, and then she kind of dropped them almost. And you could tell she might have been thinking about tipping the visor, but she didn't quite get there yet. And one of my favorite things about Tiff's Twitter and Instagram and everything is it is absolutely the furthest thing from what you'd expect any pro golfer to do on a weekly, daily, and sometimes hourly basis. So go follow her. It's at Tiff Joe. It's T-I-F-F-J-O-H. And if you are not following her, you are doing it wrong because she's really interesting. And then for me, I'm skipping mailbag this week because I'm doing a big mailbags on foxsports.com. So make sure you check that out on Thursday. I'll tweet that out as well. So we'll have a whole bunch of questions filled out over there. But I did want to touch on this. If you missed this week on the European Tour, then we'll give you a soundbite. Andrew Johnston, Beef, won the event on the European Tour. And let me just say, we need more of this in professional golf.
What does it mean for the family and your friends back home? I'm sure they're going absolutely ballistic right now.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back to North Mid and, yeah, get hammered and see my mom, brother, and spend time with them and just celebrate.
Yeah, that's the soundbite he told the European Tour right after he won. Gary Player even retweeting it saying, don't get too hammered, which I really enjoyed. Gary's obviously very gracious with his tweets. He always sends people love when they win any tour, any pro tournament, and sometimes calls them, as we heard in the first podcast with the Bryan Bros. But my favorite part about that is get hammered and hang with mom and his brother. Getting hammered and hanging with mom. Now, maybe not normally the route a lot of pro golfers would go, or pro athletes for that matter. They probably hang with their buddies. Maybe they'd go get a group of people together. Maybe go to Vegas. Maybe go to a party. He wants to go home, hang with mom and his brother. And let me just say, kudos to you, Andrew Johnston. It was an amazing post-round interview, amazing week of golf. And I think you are a early candidate for quote of the year in golf. And we're going to do that. We're going to have awards at the end of the year on the podcast. And we've been keeping track of all these kind of quotes and funny little quirky things that go on. So, Johnston, great week from Grace. And next up, as I mentioned, we have Brad Faxon, obviously a colleague of mine at Fox Sports, really just one of the most surprising great dudes I've met in all of golf. Not to say I thought he was going to be a jerk. It's just, you know, you meet people that have been doing this for years and years and years, and everybody wants to talk to them about this and that and talk golf. Fax is just one of the nicer people that I work with. You know, he sends you congratulatory texts when he thinks you do a good job. One of those types of people, and I wish there were more Brad Faxons around. So got to chat with him about a few things. We chatted DeChambeau, we chatted Rory in his putting, Dustin Johnson in his putting. Obviously, Fax, one of the best putters of all time in golf. And then I asked him for some predictions, not just at Oakmont, for all the other major venues as well. Plus, I got to hear what he had to eat, which is something I'm asking all these golfers. And Brad, pretty healthy. So let's get into it. Here we go. Brad Faxon here on the Clubhouse. And we welcome into the Clubhouse a friend of ours, Brad Faxon, 8-time PGA Tour champion analyst for Fox Sports. Finished in the top 25 in nearly 30% of his career starts on the PGA Tour. Kind of a sneaky good number, Brad.
I've never heard that stat before. And you made it sound pretty good, Shane. So, no, I'll take that.
All right. Well, I ask everybody that is a pro golfer, has played pro golf, on what they've had to eat today to start. So have you had anything good? I know you've been traveling all day.
Well, it's been a traveling day. I would say I've been on the healthier side with some steel-cut oatmeal, a little bit of fruit, and some nuts to go in there.
Well, that's good. I wanted to get going.
But I am looking for lunch right now.
Yeah, you're cruising around. I wanted to ask you and I had a chance last year at the U.S. Amateur to get kind of a firsthand look at Bryson DeChambeau, who, you know, I mean, a lot of talk about Spieth, a lot of talk about Danny Willett coming out of the Masters. But, you know, to me, after the Heritage, the focus really on Bryson and really his future. You know, you had a chance to cover him there at the AM. What were your initial thoughts, and kind of what are your thoughts about his game going forward as a pro?
Well, you know, he's impressive in a lot of different ways, not just how he hits a golf ball, but how he handled himself. And he's in that elite club of guys that have won in the same year, the U.S. Amateur and the NCAA championships. You know, you look at those names of, you know, Jack Nicklaus and Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods and Ryan Moore. It's a pretty cool crowd to be associated with. You know, and DeChambeau was relentless in the USAM. And Olympia Fields, a tough golf course. He drove it far. His short game was magnificent. You know, we saw him pitch in against Derek Bard on the back of the eighth green with Greg Norman standing there. He seemed to have all the shots. And, you know, Jim Nance told me a pretty cool story, Shane. Back in January, he was going over to play in Dubai, and Nance asked him if his plans were to turn pro after he played in the Masters. And he said, without any arrogance, Jim said, "No, I plan to turn pro after I win the Masters."
I mean, it kind of fits with what I think is so polarizing about him. And really, I'm not sure we've had a player come out of his amateur status and be this polarizing this quickly, is the fact that everything he does is a bit different. And people aren't totally sure of him. I mean, I got a chance to talk to him, you know, at the AM, as we talked about. You got a chance to speak with him as well. I mean, he's a very nice kid. He presents himself well, goes about his business. I'm confused, I guess, at why people don't seem to like him right away.
You know, I would say the same thing, Shane. He was nothing but polite to everybody around him when I was around there. As a matter of fact, I was lucky enough after he won his semifinal match to go down on the range and hit some balls with his equipment. We haven't touched on what he's done with that yet, but, you know, he's a pioneer in that respect. Nobody's done what he's doing, altering their equipment so dramatically or drastically than anyone before him.
And you got a chance to hit those clubs. Are you going to give us the full details on what happened when you made some swings with those clubs? Because I feel like you're leaving out a big part of this story.
Well, it is a big part. You know, he does a couple things. First of all, for the listeners, he uses all his clubs at the same length as a 7-iron. So a 37.5-inch 7-iron, they're all the same weight, which is very different than anybody else does. All the clubs are not the same weight throughout the set, and the lie angles change dramatically. The 3-iron and the 9-iron in his set, you stand the same distance from the ball. But to compound that even further, he uses a grip, a size of a grip that's kind of equivalent to it, a baseball bat. The handle of a baseball bat would be like, so he's got the fattest grip. He stands his hands up very high as he would have to be for the upright lie angle. So he keeps both his arms on the same plane as the shaft, swings the club very upright with a lot of, not very much wrist set through the ball. But I got up to hit his 9-iron. I asked him if I could hit a shot. He didn't say much, but said, "Sure, give it a shot." And I hit this first one, a low sculled 9-iron. I probably went 100 yards, you know, with 10 yards of slice. And I asked him after I hit that shot, I go, "What do most guys do with your club the first time they hit it. He goes, that's what they do. So I went to try and hit a 3-iron. I don't think I could hit his 3-iron more than 150 yards in the air. It was so hard to do that close to the ball. And he said it took him a year and a half to get this set of clubs to where he wanted it.
And kind of surprising, really, you know, I mean, of course you're going to sign a club deal, you know, when you turn pro, and he signs with Cobra, and obviously they've been working with him on some new clubs. But you mentioned, and it was something I was interested in seeing what would happen this week especially, is he does have a new set of clubs in there, and a club company that basically has to recreate how to make golf clubs when they're building these things for him. I mean, they've never seen these types of clubs either.
No, not at all. You know, he has a contract with a grip company that he's been working with for years, and my guess is he's probably using the same irons that he used in college, and his woods were different. He didn't have the same lie angles in his wooden clubs, and so, you know, I think he'll give them some exposure. He's the young, right type of person for that brand, and like I said, he's powerful, and, you know, he played well at Augusta, finished low amateur, and then finished tied for fourth at the RBC at Harbortown, a very tough course with really tough conditions, windy conditions, similar to the first 3 days at Augusta. So he's proven that he can hit a lot of different shots.
And do you think, when you turn pro, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you turn pro, I just feel like there wasn't as much pressure to go out and win as early as there is now for these guys. You know, with the Jordan Spieths and the Justin Thomases and Rory, Jason Day, all the, you know, Matsuyama, all these guys are early 20s and already established. Do you feel like the pressure's higher now for guys to come out of college and immediately have success?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's the pressure, Shane, or if it's the expectation that the players have. I can tell you a story. I went through the qualifying school in the fall of 1983, and a few players that you might know that went through that were Corey Pavin, Willie Wood, Joey Sindelar, Donnie Hammond, and those guys. You know, when we were on the tour our first year, it was almost unaccepted that you could win right away. It was almost like you had to pay your dues. As a matter of fact, Hubert Green told me after I had finished second or third at one of the tournaments that it was better for me to not win early in my career to learn the ropes more. And I'm like, I can't think of any reason why I didn't want to win that tournament.
Right.
I would deal with that well. And now, you know, the players that are coming out, you know, you think about Rory McIlroy turned pro, like you said, was he 16 or 17 years old? Spieth left college early, as did, you know, Tiger and Phil. So it's expected these guys come out to play to win. And it's a great attitude to have. But the junior golf programs now, like the American Junior Golf Association Tour, the kids play in, they know what it's like to have some structure. And then, of course, the college, the level of play. So, you know, if you went away from the PGA Tour and all the world professional tours, then you go to the web.com, then college is the next level where you're seeing the best players in the world. And that's helped immensely. And you know, DeChambeau to win the NCAA championship, he played well in stroke play. We saw him play great in match play. And, you know, he earned himself by finishing in the top 10 a spot this week in Valero in San Antonio.
Yeah, and I just, again, I feel, and I wrote this on Twitter on Monday, and some people were a little confused, but I said, you know, already it seems like what he's done has made him a top six needle mover in golf, just because when he does stuff, when he's playing well, when he's playing in these tournaments and turning pro, it seems like, love him or hate him, people are paying attention to him, and to me that's important because, you know, you've got Rory and Jordan. You know, you've got Ricky, who obviously moves the needle as well, and Jason Day, and then maybe some international players that move the needle in their respective areas or regions. But, you know, for me, a young American to come in, and again, there's people that really don't like him for no other reason than he goes about his game differently. So I'm excited to watch what happens because, I mean, if it takes him 12 months to win, you know, you mentioned Ryan Moore, obviously an amateur player that came out that had a lot of expectations that took him a while to maybe get in that comfort level of being a pro golfer. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Bryson, you know, as he moves forward as a pro golfer.
Well, you know, it's taken Ricky Fowler, like you said, he's one of the biggest names in professional golf worldwide, to win, you know, a few tournaments, never mind majors. So Ricky's still not in that big four level, but he'd be in that big four level of as an attraction. And DeChambeau, you know, it remains to be seen whether he wins right out of the box. But when Jack Nicklaus came on the scene, you know, in 1961, and it was particularly in 1962, playing the U.S. Open at Oakmont, where we'll broadcast this year's Open, you know, he took on Arnold Palmer in his backyard and took him down, and he wasn't a popular figure then. And, you know, I think DeChambeau's, he's kind of assigned a mad scientist, a little bit like Phil, but he's got an engineering background. You know, he's figured out a lot of things about the game that he strongly believes in, and he's going to upset some people because, you know, just the way he, you know, he prepares, the some of the things that he says, you know, might insult some of the players, not knowingly insulting them. But, you know, I think sometimes when a kid comes out and has immediate success, there's a lot of jealousy, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And moving on from him for a bit, I wanted to touch on Rory McIlroy. You know, we've talked about him already. You know, Rory's had an amazing career thus far. And a guy that it really interests me all the time because on the golf course, he looks like he's totally involved and into it. Off the golf course, he doesn't seem to have that same killer instinct that maybe like, you know, a Tiger did or Kobe or anybody you wanted to list off that, Federer and at all, anybody. But I wanted to ask you, you know, he hasn't won a major since 14. He's been struggling. He's been tinkering with his putting. What do you see as one of the best known putters in the world, really, to date? What do you see when you watch Rory putt in 2016 that looks different than what maybe you saw when he was winning the majors back in 14?
Shane, before I answer the putting part of it, you know, I look at Rory as a guy that's a very friendly kid, has a lot of guys on the tour that like him. He's an outgoing person, a lot like Nick Price was when Nick was the number one player in the world early. Kind of can speculate that, hey, you know what, you can't be great at this game unless you have intimidation and killer instinct. And, you know, Rory's done pretty well so far, you know, not having won a Masters, but rebounding well after his collapse a few years ago. And, you know, the one spot in his game that's been very inconsistent has been his short game. He's a disciple of Dave Stockman, who teaches a method of keeping your hands forward, your left hand leading, the shaft forward, a little more loft on the putter, and it's a blocking style of putting. And, you know, Stockton's helped a lot of players, and he's as much a mental coach as he is a putting coach. But it's been the one part of the game that's held Rory back. You know, I don't know that I could say with certainty that if he had a different putting style, he'd be a lot better. But it seems like his misses are to the right a lot. He seems like he doesn't release the head of the putter like a lot of the players do. You know, I would, if I were helping Rory, I'd love to show him some other strokes and see how the head of the putter passes the hands after impact in almost every case.
And you mentioned putting. Obviously, I mentioned, you know, you're a well-known great putter in the history of golf, really. Do you laugh when you hear people talk about guys like Dustin Johnson, where they say, one of the best golfers in the world, if only he could putt? Because, you know, to me, that's like being a great basketball player that can't shoot. I mean, sure, being athletic and 6'5 and hitting the ball a mile is great, but it's such an important aspect of the game. I always kind of put my head back a little bit when I hear people talk about if only he could, because to me, that's saying if only a 5'6 golfer could hit it 340. I mean, it's just not going to happen right now. Do you think guys like Dustin can find that touch around the greens that could maybe propel them to major championship wins?
I think so. And I, when I do a lot of the clinics, I definitely tell the amateurs, I said, you know, this is a part of the game that you don't need to have incredible physical skill to do this. You have to have a great attitude and you have to have time. You have to have time to get better at it. And my putting numbers, my statistics were better as I got into my 30s. I got better. So like Dustin Johnson's realized that he can get better at this, but it's not something that's just going to be magically found in making his stroke a little better. He's got to think about himself being a great putter. He's got to prepare, you know, better than he has. And, you know, I think the rub I was given, you know, by being a good putter was, boy, you're lucky you could putt because you couldn't hit
right,
it, you know.
Right.
You know, I could get it around the golf course. It, you know, it wasn't like I was hitting it out of bounds every shot. So, you know, it's, you know, and there's been a lot of great players like that. You know, certainly we put Ben Crenshaw, who was one of my putting idols as a kid. You know, he didn't hit every fairway, nor did Seve Ballesteros or Tom Watson. But they could certainly do it well enough. And
yeah. Don't you think Spieth gets that a little bit now? Don't you think a lot of people discredit Spieth's ball striking because he's such a great putter that they act like the guy can't hit it like a lot of the other pros can?
Exactly, and you see him measured to the other two best players in the world, and, you know, particularly Jason Day when he has his best game. You know, if you think about Whistling Straits, how how great he played, but, you know, Spieth hung in there, you know, and Spieth had, you know, one of the greatest golfing years in the history of the game at 21 and 22 years old, by not being a great hitter of the ball. Come on, we saw him at Chambers Bay hit iron after iron close to the flag, and I think this guy rebounds from the Masters loss without any problem. He's so headstrong, and that's where you're not going to see any statistics show up on any stat book, and that's where all the great champions have won more than they've lost, by being stronger mentally than anything else.
Yeah, and we talk about the U.S. Open, obviously going to be on Fox. You know, you're going to be in the booth. It's an exciting time because we're going from maybe an unknown U.S. Open venue in Chambers Bay to the most known U.S. Open venue in Oakmont. You played in 94. You finished tied for 33rd at that U.S. Open. Of all the open venues, do you feel that Oakmont is the most challenging that the players will face?
Well, you know, and it's such a great golf course, tee to green, and it's so difficult, you know, if you miss the fairway, to get the ball either out of the rough or out of the fairway bunkers to stay on these greens. So there's going to be a premium off the tee here. I don't think length is going to be the biggest factor, even though it's going to be a very long golf course for the players as a par 70. You know, the ninth hole will be a par four, which is normally a member's par five. And if anything, Oakmont's known for is the speed and the treachery of the greens. These undulations with a bunch of the approach shots, greens that slope from front to back, which you don't really see that much in modern day architecture anymore. I think it's going to give the players fits. I would say you're going to have to really have discipline off the tee there, Shane. I don't think it's going to be a guy that's necessarily hitting the ball 350 yards down the middle of every fairway.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, giving the players fits. And it seems like every year, especially at U.S. Opens, that players, for the most part, find a way to complain about the golf course or the setup or whatever. And my question to you is, when you went into U.S. Opens, I mean, you knew it was going to be tough, right? I mean, everybody knows it's the hardest test in golf. I mean, was your mentality just to try to, you know, stay within yourselves and understand that this week in particular is going to be a really, really tough 4 days of golf?
Right. And, you know, most of the U.S. Open venues are not courses the players play every year, like a PGA Tour event. So they may see these courses once every 10 years. You know, they'll see people at the registration desk that they don't see ever. They're not familiar with where they're staying. The traffic is worse. It's not easy to get passes like they are on the PGA Tour for your friends. So everything's a little bit different. And at a U.S. Open, you know, the patience is a huge part of it. You know, the course preparation is a big part of it. And I think when you're playing good golf, when you're playing your best golf, you can't wait to get to the U.S. Open. If you're off in any part of your game, it's always, always a struggle.
And I wanted to talk to you about, you know, your transition into TV and just, you know, initially how you got excited about getting into broadcasting, because you're great at it. I mean, I don't want to just say that because I work with you. I mean, I think you're really, really solid at what you do with it. But how you got into it and, you know, why you wanted to kind of continue in golf in that regard, because, I mean, I think a lot of the people who've had great careers are going to go, let me get out of here. I'm going to go do something else.
Well, you know, Shane, I grew up with a father that was a pretty good player, and I caddied for him a lot of times in the mornings, and he'd play with his group of guys, and I loved being out on the golf course, for one, and I loved listening to their commentary on their games, their shots, you know, the little words they would use to describe somebody's bad shot, good shot, when things were going wrong, their little idiosyncrasies and sayings, and I just loved to talk about golf whenever it was, and whether it was playing as a junior later on in college or even professionally. I just loved that. I thought the social part of the game was as fun for me as the competitive part. So going to talk about it on television is like an added bonus.
It is fun. And of course we've got a new partner this year with Paul Azinger. What are you excited about with him being in the booth as well? And what will he bring to the broadcast when we get to Oakmont?
Well, you know, Paul was a great competitor himself, and he's so enthusiastic. You know, Captain Ryder Cup team, he talks about the game in ways like Sun Tzu did in The Art of War, like it was a battle, and you couldn't, you know, he had little fights with other players like Seve Ballesteros, you know, and he was one of those guys that wanted to be an intimidator, and he talks about his fears when he was playing, and you know, I think he's very open and honest about that. And it's easy to fall in love with his, you know, his how excited he gets, and just being on the call with him a couple of days ago, I think he's really going to help, you know, make everybody understand what playing the U.S. Open is really like.
I mean, it is exciting. It's going to be fun. Obviously, a fun second year for Fox. I wanted to ask you, as we transition into 2016 and really into the tour, the New Age Tour, you know, a lot of people would say that the European Tour is quote unquote more fun because it's a little bit more camaraderie. The guys like hang out together. But with the young Americans out there today, like even this week, Justin Thomas, Ricky, Jordan Spieth, Smiley Kaufman are all on they're calling it their spring break 2016 trip. They're going to an island. They're going to play golf together. Is the PGA Tour turning a little bit more into the European style, where these guys understand one another and want to hang out together? Because it didn't seem like this was the case, during the Tiger era.
Well, you know, it's funny. Azinger mentioned that on the phone call the other day we had with Mark Loomis, our producer, saying how, you know, Tiger Woods may be the last intimidator in golf. And if you think about the top three golfers now, we mentioned them before, Day, Spieth, and McIlroy, how nice of people they are. And most of the people think if you don't have this killer instinct, and if you like your competitors, your fellow competitors, you're not going to be able to stay around this game for too long. And I don't think that's true. I don't think you have to be mean-spirited out here. I don't think you have to be an intimidator. I think your intimidation really comes from how well you play. You know, Tom Watson, certainly a very nice and respected guy to play with. He wasn't intimidating because he hit it 50 miles further. You hit every fairway, but he just somehow got the ball in the hole. And, you know, I think that's the mark of what a great player is. It doesn't mean how tough he is.
Yeah, it was like the Rory McIlroy quote after playing with Jordan on Saturday at the Masters, when he said he turned around to his caddy, JP, and said, "How the hell's this guy 200 par?" I mean, it almost feels like that, where he's beating you mentally more than he is with anything else, because he's able to score even when he's not hitting it great.
And, you know, that's, you know, when Tiger Woods first came out in 1996 and 97, when he was just a youngster, even before he won the Masters, and he'd won a couple events, and he said he didn't even have his A game, you know, so he was able to find a way to play well and to win. And, you know, there's a lot of players out here that are very talented when everything's going well, you know, when they're driving the ball well, irons are going close, you're chipping and putting well, everybody's going to play well, everybody has a chance to win. But the guys that have been great for a long period of time find a way when the wheels are coming off in multiple parts of the game to get it done. And, you know, as much as we want to put Tiger Woods on this pedestal that he hit every ball straight, he was the ultimate grinder. Nobody got up and down for more places than Tiger did, save maybe Seve Ballesteros.
Yeah, and of course, that's the part of the Masters that everybody's forgetting, is the fact that after all that went down on 12, you know, Spieth was able to battle back and make a couple of birdies and knock the flag down on 16. So, you know, to me, that what you said earlier about Spieth and the bouncing back, to me, that's what I'm looking at as well with him, because hey, I'm not scared he's not going to be able to do that. And speaking of Spieth, obviously his name's going to come up here. I wanted to ask you, I'm not going to ask you for a certain name because that's not fair. And of course, we're weeks away from the U.S. Open and months away from the British and PGA. But I just wanted to, from somebody that knows these courses well, can you give us a couple of names for each of the venues that you think would have a chance to contend if they're playing well, you know, when we come through the next major? So, you know, obviously starting out with the U.S. Open at Oakmont, can you give us a couple of names of people you think will be the right type of player to contend there?
Well, I think at Oakmont, you're going to need somebody that's a steady Jim Furyk-like player. Now, we saw Furyk compete in 2007 and make his double bogey on number 17. And losing by a couple shots to Cabrera, but I think it's going to be that style of player. I wouldn't be surprised if someone like Luke Donald, when they get their driver going straight, can compete and win there. A Charles Schwartzel, we saw Brandon Grace play so well last year and win last week. I think it's going to be more that style of player. I think that, you know, you may watch Jason Day play 18 holes and he may hit one or two drives. I mean, he may drive it on 4 and 12 and that's it. You're going to have that discipline to hit that one iron or that three wood way more than you normally would want to.
Especially at a U.S. Open, a place where obviously premium on pounding the ball and making sure you get it in the short stuff. So move, you know, across the pond, we'll go to Royal Troon, obviously one of the more famous links courses in the rotation there. Any names come to mind when you're thinking about what it'll take during that week?
Well, you know, I'm going to put Spieth right there at Royal Troon. I think Troon is a course that doesn't really take as much length as some of the traditional British Open venues. It's a course that really is dependent on having some elements, and, you know, it's right on the sea. So I like Spieth there. And Louis Oosthuizen, who probably has one of the best golf swings I've ever seen, played so well at St. Andrews and won. I think he's poised to do something great this year as well. The South Africans seem to all be playing very well. And then if you wanted to move on to the PGA, I mean, what a great spot for Phil Mickelson, too, you know, where he's had success there at Baltusrol. And a course that, you know, the Tillinghast course, kind of flat, kind of plain. You don't have to have crazy length there as well. But, you know, Phil has great memories there. And I'd love to see him, you know, have a chance to win at age 46.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned some names. Obviously, you threw Spieth in there. But, you know, I thought the interesting part about Willett winning the Masters is, I mean, you know Danny Willett. You know he's a great player. But really, we'd almost been spoiled the last, six majors with, you know, Rory winning the last two in 14, and then you got Spieth winning two, and Jason Day winning the PGA Championship with Zach Johnson thrown in there. But, you know, it was kind of a big three run in the majors, and it almost feels like this year, especially with the way Willett wins that and with Spieth kind of falling apart on 12, is it could easily be a year where four names where that sports fans might not know on a first-name basis could win this, because it's really a testament to the depth that's out there right now in professional golf. I mean, there's 70 or 80 guys, maybe more, that could win a major, you know, on any given week.
I think it's harder and harder to choose now. You know, when Tiger was at his peak, you know, he was, sometimes the odds were even money for Tiger to win some of these events. And now the best player might be 8 or 9 to 1. So it's harder and harder to predict. You know, when you just mentioned Zach Johnson, I forgot him. He's the perfect golfer for a place like Oakmont. And, you know, I played golf the other day with Bobby Ford, who's the pro, longtime pro, and retiring after this year's Open at Oakmont. He's down at Seminole and Juno Beach. And, you know, he made a comment to me that, and this is how much the game's changed in just a few years. He said to me, Shane, he said, "Do you think any of the players will try and hit the green on number one?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Do you think some of the guys will go for the first green?" Now, the first hole is 460-yard hole downhill. And if you play there, you know that about the crest of the hill, about 320, it's straight downhill of the green. And he's talking about some of today's players like Bubba Watson or Dustin Johnson giving it a go.
460. I mean, yeah, we saw in Austin, I guess we saw 420 and something in Austin from a couple of those guys with those fast fairways. But it's crazy. That's insane to think. But, I mean, I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, we see it a lot at Kapalua. But it's going to be interesting. And if you think about Zach Johnson, I mean, a name you mentioned for Oakmont. I mean, if he wins Oakmont, he's a PGA Championship away from the career Grand Slam. I mean, and talking about a guy you might have never even thought about even winning one major, you know, U.S. Open seems like the one that fits his game the best.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have ever said he was a Masters candidate or an Open candidate. And all of a sudden, you know, like you said, he gets some firmer, faster conditions. I think that's where it's really going to bring the more experienced player and the guy that doesn't have to hit it miles to get them in the game.
Yeah, okay. So quickly, I'll knock out some rapid-fire questions, then I'll let you go. I know you're driving and going to play some golf, but the low score of the week at Oakmont will be?
I could just give you a number, or I can make a condition that if these conditions are not wet from storms, like when Larry Nelson won in 83 and the balls were stopping on the green, that makes the conditions way easier. Everybody thinks rain would make it harder because it makes the course play longer, but players like it when they can stop the ball.
Right.
But I think 66 will be the low round at Oakmont.
66, low round. The sneaky best golf tournament on the PGA Tour schedule each year is?
The sneaky best. You know, I think Harbortown.
It gets such a good field. It's crazy, you know? I mean, it's the week after the Masters, and I mean, you just seems to be a great field every year. I feel like it needs a little bit more fanfare. That's the one I was on my mind, too. Obviously, with all the PGA Tour tournaments I've played in. If you were Ryder Cup captain right now, how many rookies could you see making the team of 12?
Well, that's a great question. You know, there's not a big history of rookies playing Ryder Cup that gets selected, Ricky Fowler being the last. But I'm a big believer that experience in the Ryder Cup is overrated, and that the player that's playing the best at the time is the one to pick. And, you know, we see young guys like Justin Thomas, you mentioned his name before, that some of these guys, Smiley Kaufman, that are pals, you know, especially with some of the top players like Jordan Spieth, if they're, you know, in a team event like this, I think it's easier in a way to have somebody there that can, you know, hold your hand a little bit around the course for a while. And in the competition, especially a better ball, these guys can really let it loose and really let it play, make some birdies.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Thomas was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago and said, I asked him who he would want to be paired up with, and he said Jordan. He goes, I mean, we've never lost. You know, I mean, you get on the first tee at a Ryder Cup and you go, we've played in however many team events and we've never lost as a team. I mean, the confidence obviously is going to be pretty high for those types of players. I mean, is there a chance we see DeChambeau on the team?
Absolutely. And, you know, you see him go, if you know, you could have a player come out of the pack unexpected, you know, a player with a talent like a Tony Finau, who really isn't as golf experienced as some of the younger guys now, but can hit it miles. You know, if you have him as a partner with someone like Jordan Spieth, I mean, a steady player, that's a good team too. So I just think this is a really exciting time for golf. And, you know, what's going to happen with Tiger Woods? Is he going to come back? Is he going to get back where he's in competition, where people are going to want to see him play? You know, imagine if he does come back and play at Oakmont, the amount of people that will watch him play that first round.
God, can I just give Tiger one piece of advice? Don't come back for Oakmont. I just feel like give yourself a primer before. At least play something.
So, you know, there's a little bit of rumors that he's starting to practice a little bit back home in Florida, and you know, maybe he comes back to the Memorial, a place where he's won that has wider fairways. Certainly sounds like a place where Tiger Woods might come back if he's feeling good.
Yeah, and as somebody that will be part of the Fox broadcast, Tiger, we would also love you to be at the U.S. Open. So make sure you take that into account. We will be we'll be excited if you want to play, even if you missed the cut. It's totally fine with us.
That's exactly. We'd love to watch him play 18 holes for sure.
Most likely to win a second major in their career, Adam Scott, Justin Rose, or Danny Willett?
Well, I'd put Adam Scott. You know, we didn't even mention him earlier on, but he's looked so good, you know, and he's a little more confident with the putter. He just he looks like somebody that if you're a young kid now, you want to copy the motion and the swing that Adam Scott has, the power that he has. It's hard to not put him on the top five of any tournament you pick.
Especially with the way he's played this year and seems to figure out the putting thing. And it's been fun to watch that. Okay, finally, if you're buying tickets to one sporting event that isn't golf, what are you buying?
Well, I'm a biased New England Patriots fan, so I try to go to as many games, still a season ticket holder, and think that the NFL, live, good games, good matchups, what was better than except for the outcome of the Broncos-Patriots games both times they played last year.
Yeah, it was obviously fun to watch. I mean, so you've interacted with plenty of athletes over the years. Is there an athlete that comes to mind that was the most obsessed with golf that you've had a chance to play with or just talk golf with?
Oh boy, there's a lot of them. You know, I played golf with Mario Lemieux one time. He played in the celebrity tournament Billy Andrade and I had in Rhode Island, and he was maybe the most gifted athlete I had ever seen. He had a golf swing that would have fit on the driving range of any PGA Tour event. Strong, you know, he's kind of looks like some of the athletes of today that we have, like a Dustin Johnson, 6'4", big, fast, and, you know, if he hadn't had his, you know, his scare with lymphoma and some injuries, I think he was the best hockey player that ever lived.
Would you say that, have you ever played with a hockey player that hit a cut? Because I still have yet to play with one.
Every hockey player I played with just, I hate to say hit the crap out of it, but they nailed it. You know, from Bob Miller to Cam Neely, smoked it.
They hit that big old ball right to left. Well, we're going to be out at Oakmont this next week. It'll be my first time playing it, so I'm fired up to do it. I've been talking to Steve Flesh about making him play all the way in the back, so he's been giving me the whole.
I'll go there with you. The over-under will be 84.
he goes, I'm almost 50. I'm not playing all the way back. And I said, we got to see the
That's
whole
really
thing. So we got to do it. But
That's great.
I appreciate you taking some time. And like I said, I'll see you next week. And fired up. I mean, we get Oakmont. We get Wingfoot.
So
it's going to be a great, great lineup for Fox this year for the golf.
Look forward to it, Shane. Thanks a lot.
Well, that'll do it. Brad Faxon, always great. As I mentioned, big part of the Fox broadcast this year. for all the events. Our first event, obviously, the U.S. Men's Four Ball at Wingfoot. Excited about that. And then we go right from there. We roll into Oakmont. And speaking of Oakmont, we're going out there this week. So we'll be out at Oakmont earlier in the week, hoping to grab some of those guys and throw together a big podcast, especially after we play. If you have any questions about Oakmont, about preparation for it, from somebody like me, you know, shoot me any questions. Use the hashtag ClubhouseSB. You can throw it at the Clubhouse Pod or at Shane Bacon. You can send us an email, theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com. I mentioned I'm doing a big mailbag for Thursday on foxsports.com, so make sure you go check that out as well, answering all sorts of questions from DeChambeau to Tiger to really anything. I got a whole bunch of good ones. So a lot to talk about post-Masters and a lot to talk about as we head into a long stretch of golf as we get set for the U.S. Open and all the majors following. So a fun week. I'll be in Vegas this weekend for the Golf Digest event. Then I go straight to Oakmont. So busy time for me. Shoot questions about anything you have our way. And we'll be back next week with a podcast talking a lot about Oakmont and how bad it kicked my butt. So that'll be it.